This is a Media Lab podcast. Welcome to Putting It Together, the podcast that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show and song by song. My name is Kyle Marshall, your self-described Sondheim expert. I think I said this a couple weeks ago, but we are still in a heat wave where I'm at. It was 33 degrees Celsius today, and it's probably about that in the room that I'm sitting in right now. I am literally sweating bullets. It is not a good look. I guess to do the conversion, I think that's like 91, 2 something degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know. I don't speak that. I'm in Canada. Anyways, today we get to talk about one of my absolute favorite songs, Could I Leave You? I think that Phyllis is this underappreciated character in Follies, and it's wild to me that it takes so long for her to get her own solo piece in this show. Luckily, I have someone to help me through it. It is Darby Turnbull returning back to the show once again. I got to call him up in Australia while I was over here in Canada. There's something like a 18-hour time difference, which means that I was recording at about midnight when we had this conversation. So if you have any hint of tiredness in my voice, that's why. I want to get right into the show, but before we do, a couple of things. I need to thank the lovely supporters over on Patreon. Patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast to help support this show in my new quest to become completely fan supported. You can do any tier that you want, but I do make sure that I thank in particular the God That's Good tier, currently the Holy Triumvirate that are holding it down over there of Jack, Todd, and Barry. This week, for some bonus audio, me and Darby actually talked for about 20 minutes about who we would cast in the Follies film. Of course, that is actually being made. No word yet on who they are actually casting. And really, honestly, until it's actually shooting, and sometimes not even then, do I actually believe a film is going to be made. So there you go. We also need to do this. It's time for Plodding Along. Plodding Along is the part of the show where I describe to you what's happening in the plot. After last week where we heard One More Kiss, we now see Phyllis in her scene, and she confronts Ben saying that their marriage can't really continue the way that it's been. Ben kind of returns back and says that he wants a divorce, and Phyllis somewhat figures this out. She thinks that Sally is up to no good and is putting him to it. So being angry and hurt, Phyllis decides to hit back harder by singing Could I Leave You? All right, I'm going to go thank some sponsors, and then when I return, it'll be my conversation with Darby Turnbull talking about Could I Leave You? Putting It Together is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. This episode is brought to you by CPA Alberta. Did you know a chartered professional accountant, also known as a CPA, can handle more than just financials? Those three little letters mean you're working with a professional who is trained to make a difference in an organization. CPAs can bridge all areas of an organization, understand the ins and outs of your business, and bring a holistic view to problem solving. If you've never before considered hiring a CPA to take your organization to the next level, what's stopping you? Let a CPA help you bounce back from these tough economic times. For an inside look at how Alberta CPAs are supporting their clients through the pandemic, follow CPA Alberta on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. You can also visit cpaalberta.com to find out more. This week we are also brought to you by Park Power, a provider of electricity and natural gas in Alberta that offers low rates, awesome service, and profit sharing with local charities. In Alberta, you get to choose who to buy your energy from. If you choose Park Power, your money stays here. Plus, Park Power shares its profits with local not-for-profits that are working to make a difference for their communities. Shopping local is very important to Park Power's owner, Chris Kozowski, and we love local here at the Alberta Podcast Network, so it's a great fit. Learn more at parkpower.ca.
Leave you, leave. leave you? How could I leave you? How could I go it alone? Could I wave the years away with a quick goodbye? How do you wipe tears away when your eyes are dry?
Sweetheart, Darby, thank you so much for coming back.
Hi, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, because you've been here already, I would like to jump right in and ask you, what was your first introduction to Follies?
Bits and pieces, actually, for me. I mean, I think I've said on previous episodes that Sondheim, for me, was sort of my teen angst sort of musician of choice. I've spent sort of more hours than I care to admit singing Losing My Mind in the Mirror. I was really sort of introduced to it sort of through the songs Out of Order. And I've only seen it once, and that was through a live recording of from the National Theatre in London. And I love it, especially, I think it's probably best that I came to it sort of probably as an adult as well, because I feel like my understanding of it's probably a little bit more nuanced.
I'm wondering if you have any sense of why that is, like why as an adult do you resonate with this story?
When I was a teenager, you know, I was like, oh, this show is about bitterness. It's about regret. Everyone is just miserable. It's depleting for everyone around. And then when I came to as an adult, especially being able to see all the songs in sequence and see the libretto and see different performances and that, I found it like really life-affirming and kind of lovely in a way, even though the central quartet, you know, are so broken and so damaged and all that. And that's sort of like, and that certainly is a really huge part of the show. I really appreciate that there are all these other sort of ancillary characters in there who are actually living really wonderful lives and are really in love with life and really in love with life's struggles, you know, joys and small tragedies. I think it offers a really lovely, sort of quite a nuanced view of like the various different ways that you can grow older and the various different ways you can reckon with your past and move on and grow from that. I think I just always assumed that it was like that there was no hope in Follies, that it was just this really quite like dour, really dire situation. Mm-hmm. But no, I was really quite sort of pleased to feel it's like, oh wow, like these characters have their shit together in a lot of great ways. And it's just these four that are just, you know, messing around and destroying each other in the process.
No, something that I posted on Twitter here today, so people, if they want to go back in time, they'll know exactly what day we recorded this on. I actually asked, if you had to argue that there was only one protagonist in Follies, which I know that there really isn't, but if you had to, who would it be, is what I asked in a little Twitter poll. What do you think on that question?
For me, Sally, 100%. I think the stakes are sort of highest for Sally. I think her story is probably the most tragic and the hardest and the ones that sort of, and I think the one that the audience would probably resonate with the most. And I think she sort of holds some of the show's sort of main themes of, you know, regret and, you know, obviously the lies that we tell ourselves. And she's stuck so firmly in the past and there's a past that she can't move on from. So yeah, I would probably say her. What do you think? Do you agree?
I actually have two different opinions on that. I was just going to say that 74% of the people who have voted agree with you. So wide margin agree that Sally is the main character. That's hard to argue. I will have to say, though, only because of this, because of how the show ends, it really feels like it ends on the Ben character specifically. It seems like it's him that really pushes things to go sideways into the Loveland fever dream, as I like to call it. So, I don't know. I think that it is kind of this story of Sally and Ben, who are from two different couples that have their other people, other spouses kind of along for the ride sort of thing. But yeah, if any character arcs, I think Sally is probably the one that you have the best argument for, probably.
I think I agree with your like initial statement. I don't see them as being a protagonist as such. I feel it's sort of equal characters in a way.
It is true. I think that there is... It's really like all four of them are kind of the main.
I suppose if I wanted to pick an actual protagonist of the show, I think it would be Carlotta.
Oh, interesting. The person who only gets one song. This, of course, is a song that is sung by Phyllis. And it's interesting how she is this, I feel like, a very dynamic character. I think she's very fascinating. But this is the 13th song, or 12th song, depending on which version you're looking at, in the show, and it's the first time she's had a solo. Do you have any interpretation of why it's taken so long for us to hear from her?
You know, she's the one who's least emotionally shielded from sort of the realities of her sort of situation and all that. And I think it's really good that they're sort of holding their cards. They're keeping those cards so close up until this point. Like, up until this point, she's the only one who's never lied during her solo. So I think it's really good that, you know, she is the one that sort of almost leads them into the dreamscape by just, like, spewing forth, you know, all this truth and all this sort of, like, well, at least her truth and all this sort of, like, really caustic reality-based, like, diatribe.
Well, let's talk about the song here more fully. The song, of course, that we're talking about here today is Could I Leave You, sung by Phyllis. So I want to give credit where credit is due. So the actresses that portrayed it in the kind of productions we're looking at here this season are Alexis Smith from the original Broadway cast, Diana Rigg from the 1987 London version, and then Janie D from the 2017 National Theatre version. I mean, this is her kind of putting, yes, Ben into his place and, like, really letting him have it here. All of the baggage is out here on the table. This is how Phyllis starts into this song. She says, "Leave you? Leave you? How could I leave you? How could I go it alone? Could I wave the years away with a quick goodbye? How do you wipe tears away when your eyes are dry? Sweetheart, lover, could I recover? Give up the joys I have known? Not to fetch your pills again every day at 5? Not to give those dinners for 10 elderly men from the UN? How could I survive?
Leave you, leave you. How could I leave you? How could I go it alone? Could I wave the years away with a quick goodbye? How do you wipe tears away when your eyes are dry? Sweetheart, lover, could I recover? Give up the joys I have known? Not to fetch your pills again every day at 5. Not to give those dinners for 10 elderly men from the UN. How could I survive?
Could I..." So from those first two stanzas, Darby, what do you think? What's your reading of this woman's state of mind?
I mean, I love that it's in a waltz. You know, it's very controlled. It's very, like, short statements. And, you know, she's, like, going, "No, no, leave you. How could I leave you?" No, she goes, at this point, like, I think he proceeds this on going, "Well, why don't you leave me?" You know, she's giving, like, these little insights into what their marriage is like. You know, and she goes, not to fetch your pills again every day at 5, not to give those dinners for 10 elderly men from the UN. Oh, how could I survive? Like, she's really showing, like, what a chore this marriage is for her, like, sort of what work it is. Mm-hmm. And, like, how completely unsatisfying it is.
The master of sarcastic singing, probably. I mean, I look at, like, that, those two lines of, like, "How do you wipe your tears away when your eyes are dry?" Like, I don't know how much more, like, to the bone you can be with the person you're married to. It's like, I don't really care about you at all.
Yeah, no, precisely. I think it's the one that I'm having the most fun with his wordplay. Yeah, I think she's sort of playing him with his own weapons, in a way, and sort of at this point winning.
What do you think about the last few lines? Because I think Sondheim gets into these, like, really quick rhyme schemes. It's like, "Not to give those dinners for 10 elderly men from the UN, how could I survive?" Like, it's a very, like, punctuated, statement that she's making. But it feels like she's, like, almost, like, throwing, like, little daggers at him at the same time.
You just see these dry, old, pompous men that she just has to put up with. You know, it's like she's putting up with, like, a dinner party full of Bens, you know, all night. And, like, giving those dinners, like, supporting him being the hostess. Because I think that's sort of, like, one of her big sort of things. It's like, Phyllis froze probably the best parties. And the reason why, you know, Ben has probably gotten as far as he has in politics is because he's had this beautiful, like, witty, vivacious, you know, erudite. You have this constant sort of image of, you know, the wife who is really, really pulling the strings, like, from behind.
You know, I said that in a previous recording with somebody about how, like, there is this weird, like, political dynamic, like a Bill Clinton and a Hillary Clinton. Not that I know anything about their actual relationship, but just, like, the perception of, like, loveless marriage and just in it for political gain. Like, that very much seems like what this relationship is like.
No, yeah, absolutely. And it's so fun as well. Just, like, I think I said this before, it's so delicious just what she's doing here, the way she's making him squirm. Because I know we've still got probably like 4 minutes of the song left to go, but at this point, like, I don't understand how Ben is just not falling into, like, a puddle of goo. Your image was so beautiful, like her throwing daggers at him. She's just, like, pricking apart his pomposity in such a great way. God, I love Phyllis.
Yeah, she's great. Well, this is how she continues. Could I leave you and your shelves of the world's best books and the evenings of martyred looks, cryptic sighs, sullen glares from those injured eyes? Leave the quips with a sting, jokes with a sneer, passionless lovemaking once a year. Leave the lies ill-concealed and the wounds never healed and the games not worth winning and, wait, I'm just beginning. What? Leave you? Leave you? How could I leave you? What would I do on my own? Putting thoughts of you aside in the south of France. Would I think of suicide? Darling, shall we dance?
Could I leave you and your shelves of the world's best books and the evenings of martyred looks, cryptic sighs, sullen glares from those injured eyes, leave the quips with a sting, jokes with a sneer, passionless lovemaking once a year, leave the lies ill-concealed and the wounds never healed and the game's not worth winning. And wait, I'm just beginning. What, leave you? Leave you? How could I leave you? What would I do on my own? Putting thoughts of you aside in the south of France. Would I think of suicide? Darling, shall we dance?
So talk about like turning the screw here a little bit. But yeah, what are your opinions of this next little section?
I think this is where the cracks are beginning to show. These little moments of hurt that are coming through, you know, it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, you know, the sex with you is just horrible. I hate it. But it's just like, she's still doing it. And that whole thing of just like, oh, no, it's passionless. Like, and it's sort of like, I think it's leaving the door open for, you know, there was passion here at one point. Like, there was love, there was camaraderie. You know, I think this is her opening up a little bit and just sort of saying, actually, no, this is actually having really profound emotional implications for me. But she's not giving him much. She's just letting a little bit in there. And like, and the whole, yeah, I get the impression, yeah, she probably has at some point, you know, thought of suicide. Mm. And so is he. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
For me, I think I'm there with you in like, these are sort of the cracks that we're starting to see in the Phyllis character, because I think really up until this point, even in the show, she has been portrayed as like this very stern, for lack of a better word. She's had like happy moments, of course, but still like has the witty joke, has the sarcastic comment. And here, I think even in this song, in those first two stanzas we read, that starts off with like, let me tell you why you are awful. And then here, I think it's starting to turn inward a little bit. It's like, but I'm still here. So why am I angry with you? I could just leave if I really, really deeply wanted to. And like you're saying, like, I think she probably has had thoughts of suicide. She probably has thought of like running away to France. And yet she still stays around. And I think she's like criticizing herself just as much as she has been.
No, yeah, precisely. She's saying, yeah, this is the life I could live. I mean, she would definitely have the means. He doesn't really have a hold too much. Like, we don't get the impression that she's been coerced into staying sort of by Ben. It's not like she would be completely destitute. If she did divorce him, like, she probably would, like, have a very handsome settlement, you know, from him. Mm-hmm. And she could live a very comfortable life sort of on her own. And, you know, we're in the 70s at this point. So divorce is, you know, on the up. You know, I think no-fault divorce is sort of, well, they could definitely get like a divorce on the grounds of like infidelity and things like that. But, you know, I think at this point she goes, it would be sort of relatively pragmatic for her to actually just pick up and leave. Like, that is very much an option. And I think it's really good that sometimes getting this sort of out of the way, sort of like saying, no, the thing that is keeping Phyllis in this marriage is her.
You know, I wanted to talk about that world's best book line. What's interesting in the book Finishing the Hat is that that line, world's best books, is actually capitalized as if it's like a proper title or name of something. And so I wasn't super familiar with this, so mm-hmm. I had to look it up. So it's not called this anymore. It's actually now called the Modern Library. It's owned by Random House. Basically, these like leather-bound or at least hardback books that are quote-unquote, like, the best titles of, like, the last 100 years, as decided by we don't know. I don't know if you are familiar with Reader's Digest, but they kind of did a similar thing that my parents actually had. Like, books that are, like, leather-bound that no one really actually reads. They're just there to look nice on your bookshelf and never actually be touched. So it's, like, that whole, like, keeping up appearances thing.
Oh, yeah. And like, no, I completely relate to that. And like, cause I think that was whole Reader's Digest only thing. They only gave you like bits of them, or they
right,
sort of
right.
Yeah, and I found that really fascinating because, like, if we sort of were imagining, you know, the books on Phyllis and Ben's shelves, like what if they're just completely, what if they're not, what if they're incomplete or, you know, bastardized, and what if they don't even know that? And I think it's going back to this one particular line as well, I mean, I think it's a really nice throwback, you know, when young Phyllis is sort of making her case to young Ben as to why he should be with her. She goes, I will read. I will do everything. Like, I will learn. Like, I will study. I will do all these things to make myself the kind of woman that you will need to get through life and to, like, advance your career. Yeah, she probably has, like, all the best authors at her parties as well. Like, and Ben would say he's read the books, but he hasn't. But she actually would, and she'd be able to talk about them.
Yeah, feeding him lines and stuff. Yeah, for sure. Hashtag justice for Phyllis is really what we're trying to say here. I wanted to talk a little bit about the rhyme scheme that's going on here, which is Sondheim is playing around a little bit, I feel, because, like, the very first stanza is very weird because the first two lines rhyme with each other, you, and then alone is kind of by itself, and then years away rhymes with tears away, goodbye rhymes with dry. But then we go through this, like, long series of, like, rhyming couplets, like lover recovered, like the 10 man UN, and then it kind of goes through world's best books, martyred looks, cryptic sighs, injured eyes, and then he kind of goes back into, like, the alternating ABAB rhyme again. So I don't really know what that means necessarily, but it's a really interestingly structured song because it kind of flips around with how the rhyme scheme goes throughout the entire song. There doesn't seem to be, like, one way that he's writing it, which to me, if I'm going to get, like, super, like, analyze-y with this, feels like it's, like, even her, she's kind of, like, being fractured and, like, going all around and not being able to keep a mindset going in. It's, like, completely going and flipping around as she kind of flips out of control.
I think at this point, if the actor playing Phyllis is beginning to sort of run out of breath a bit, it can really sort of reflect the emotional state that she's getting in. Like, her feathers are ruffled now, and it's sort of like, you know, when you said when she brings in those couplets, like, they could be like gasps, but they could be like gasps. They could be like, you know, just angry little bursts of, like, oh, could I recover? Give up the joys I have known. You know, it's like, yeah, like, she can always spit them out in a way. I mean, and I think it really comes through in, you know, someone like Diana Rigg, who is, you know, first an actress and a singer sort of second. And it does require really, really good breath control to sing, because I actually have sung this song, you know, several open mic nights and auditions and all that. And it's really interesting, like, the way that your breath goes as a performer when you're singing this song, because, like, you have to use it in really specific ways. Like, I think it's almost like representing her heart rate going up. And
Just like how the actress performs this is, like, half the fun, right? Because I don't necessarily think you do need to have an actress that is, like, great at singing. As long as you can really commit to this and perform it well, I think it's going to land really, really nicely. I don't know if you would necessarily call this the 11 o'clock number, but it sometimes feels like that they give it to Phyllis to be like, let's tear down the house before the Loveland sequence kind of, like, rears its head.
Yeah, and I think it's really satisfying. I love that sort of this song really tears it down and just is like, oh, no, Ben's a dick. Ben is the worst.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's probably my own personal bias showing through, but, like, I hate Ben with fiery passion. I think he's a fun character, but, like, he deserves all the mire that is in this song and just, like, just the venom that's in there, because he's a really horrible piece of work, in my opinion. I'm yet to hear someone be a Ben apologist, but I think I'd like to hear that just to see what they could come up with.
I mean, I'm definitely no Ben apologist. Like, I kind of get where he's coming from, but so much of the pain that he feels is through his own choices, so it's harder, I think, truly empathize with him. That's my opinion, of course. So maybe, like, write in if you're a Ben apologist. Let us know what you think. So Phyllis continues on, could I live through the pain on a terrace in Spain? Would it pass? It would pass. Could I bury my rage with a boy half your age in the grass? Bet your ass. But I've done that already, or didn't you know, love? Tell me, how could I leave when I left long ago, love? Could I leave you? No, the point is, could you leave me? Well, I guess you could leave me the house, leave me the flat, leave me the Brocks and Chagalls and all that.
Could I live through the pain on a terrace in Spain? Would it pass? It would pass. Could I bury my rage with a boy half your age in the grass? Bet your ass. But I've done that already, or didn't you know, love? tell me, how could I leave when I left long ago? Love, could I leave you? No, the point is, could you leave me? Well, I guess you could leave me the house, leave me the flat, leave me the Brocks and Chagalls and all that. You could leave.
She then, of course, goes into like a really great ending piece here. But I want to just talk about those two parts specifically here at the very beginning. So we're really winding up here right now, too. I like this like little drop of, hey, I actually had an affair and you didn't even know about it.
Yeah. And like, I think at least in the version that I've seen, like Phyllis actually sort of has a quickie with one of the waiters at the party. Yeah, I think she talks about that quite openly, and I think it's sort of openly understood in their marriage that they are both sleeping with other people. You know, I don't think that she probably has someone who she's in love with, but yeah, I think Phyllis, you know, she's definitely sort of got like some, you know, gigolos or arm candy or sort of like someone who she's like, you know, had it off with, and I'm like, yeah, good on her.
Well, I think what's also true about that is that as a woman that would be in her 50s, at least it's supposed to be portrayed by an actress in their 50s, I think what it really shows is like, listen, like the way that you look and the way that I look in our mid-50s, like I can still date or have flings with people who are in their 20s because my looks are still here and you have literally nothing. you're keeping up the appearances, but like your beauty has long since gone away.
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's just gorgeous because I think probably Phyllis is probably a little bit more comfortable in her sexuality sort of as well. I mean, sex is obviously something that's really sort of important to her and like vital in her life. I mean, she brings it up twice, you know, within the show, and she goes, oh god, the sex with you is just so awful. And I get the sense that it's less important for Ben because I think Ben is just so out of touch with his own body and his own emotions and all that. Like, he would probably only use sex for the power it gives him or the sense of fulfillment that it gets him. The difference between them is she uses it for pleasure. You know, it's about making herself feel good. It's making her, it makes her feel in touch with herself. And just the fact that she drops in with a boy half your age, she goes, oh, yeah, I got a 25-year-old. And he was vital and it was passionate. Or actually, maybe it was awful. Like, maybe it was really incompetent and fumbly, but she at least sort of owns that.
Right. I mean, I should point out, too, before we get too far, that the 1987 version actually changes this lyric slightly to have a very different meaning. So instead of it reading, but I've done that already, or didn't you know my love? She actually says, which I might have done, or didn't you know my love? So she actually kind of couches it a little bit for some reason in the 1987 version, where she doesn't very boldly say, this is what's happening. It's like, this might have happened. And you don't even know about it, or you might not even know about it.
Yeah, and I don't prefer it like as a rhyme or as a lyric progression, but I think I like it. Sort of going, she's almost like taking it back. She's like, oh, actually, no, I'm not going to confirm this. I'm just going to let you stew in this for a bit, and you'll never know. It seems more like it seems a very Phyllis thing to do. It's just to like make him suffer through that. And I'm like, yeah, you go, Phyllis. Like, honestly, if you're not like snapping your fingers till they bleed at this point, I mean, like, who the hell are you?
Yeah, honestly, like people talk about the moment in Company where Joanne comes out, you know, and like everybody rises and like you rise to your feet, right? Because she's so like angry. Honestly, by the end of this song, I feel the same way. I wanted to like get up and like, yes, absolutely. You're totally right, Phyllis. I'm totally with you. Like, I want to just give her a standing ovation every time I hear this song performed.
It's a great cousin to the Ladies Who Lunch because, yeah, like Phyllis is very much a Joanne sort of figure in a way. Like, she's like, they're definitely of the same class. You know, she's probably a little bit more sort of self-aware and sophisticated than Joanne sort of is. But like, well, actually, no, yeah, like Phyllis is probably Ladies Who Lunch, is a lady who lunches with, that Joanne so derides. But, you know, and as Joanne sort of realizes, like, wow, these women are survivors. These women are really rock hard and have their own sort of private hurts and their own sort of private sort of humiliations and sort of, you know, limitations that they have to live through.
Now, how much do you know about either of the painters that they mention, Brock or Chagall?
Honestly, not much.
I don't know anything about them either, other than they were contemporaries of each other. Both, I think, technically called modernists. And actually, I think it's Chagall would have still been alive when Follies came out. So, which is kind of a fun little, like, little thing to know about. But basically, you just have to know that she's kind of up on her artists because she knows who, like, the movers and shakers are and who, like, the big painters of the day are. They would have been pretty big back, well, in the 70s, yes, but even, like, in the 40s, they would have been big.
Yeah, I'm actually looking them up right now, actually. I can't believe I haven't done them before. Oh, yeah, they would definitely have Braque and Chagall on their walls. And, you know, she probably, you know, purchased, you know, the paintings back when she knew that they would be worth a lot.
They're the type of people who now would be like, I have an original Banksy, like one of those people.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. To be honest, I don't get the appeal of Banksy, to be honest, but maybe that's just me being uncultured.
Well, who knows? Maybe I'm Banksy. You don't know that.
Ooh.
Yeah, a big reveal here on today's podcast, everyone. This is how Phyllis ends the song, though, and this is like my stand-up, like, give a standing ovation. You could leave me the stocks for sentiment's sake and 90% of the money you make and the rugs and the cooks. Darling, you keep the drugs. Angel, you keep the books. Honey, I'll take the grand. Sugar, you keep the spinet and all of our friends. And just wait a goddamn minute. Oh, leave you? Leave you? How could I leave you? Sweetheart, I have to confess. Could I leave you? Yes. Will I leave you? Will I leave you? Guess.
That you would leave me the stocks for sentiment's sake at 90% of the money you make and the cars and the cooks. I leave you the cigars, I leave you all the books, darling. I'll take the grand, honey, keep the spinet and all of our friends, and just wait a goddamn minute. Oh, leave you, how could I leave you? Sweetheart, I have to confess. Could I leave you? Yes. Will I leave you? Will I leave you? Guess.
That's how we end the song. How enthusiastic do you feel right now?
You know, even just like your beautiful spoken interpretation of that, I'm just like, my heart's already racing. I'm just like, if the actor is good enough and if the audience is on board enough at this point, I feel like, yeah, I think we're all Phyllis in this moment. Like, we've all gone on this emotional journey sort of with her, and we're just like, yeah. And like, but also, don't you wish that you could just tear someone down this articulately and this passionately and with this much wit, like, in your own life? Like, wouldn't that just be, isn't that just the dream?
It is a dream. It's like when I watch, like, old, like, 40s films, and it's like, man, I wish I could be this witty and quick every time somebody came into my life. But alas, I'm not, and I think about it in the shower the next day, and I'm like, ah, that's what I should have said. I'm so smart.
It's why we have musicals, really, you know, to help us get us through this. Yeah, I wouldn't mind, like, going from the very end of the song and sort of, you know, working way back. But I love that. I think this is a really great opportunity of just like going, could I leave you? Yes. And I think that's a really beautiful opportunity in this three-letter word for the actor, like, playing Phyllis, just to put all of her real pain. Because, like, I don't think this woman is just like a quip machine. Mm-hmm. You know, she's someone who lives and breathes. You know, she's got blood coursing through her veins. And I think it's really interesting to sort of pair this to the story of Lucy and Jesse and the way that Phyllis describes herself in that, you know, she describes herself in that song as like cold as a rock. And she describes herself as like hard and like unfeeling and all that. And she's really not, you know, she's not. And like, she's someone who's got a very specific way of coping, you know, in this relationship dynamic that she finds herself and the life that she's built for herself. But yeah, I think it's really important, you know, for the audience and for the character goes, no, this hurts. Like, this really matters to them both. And like, you know, and I think it makes, you know, all those really sort of those fabulously caustic, witty lines all the more poignant, because like, that is the armor that she's built for herself. And then when she says guess, and she's like, oh no, of course she's not going to leave him. Like, these two are going to, the tragedy of this is that these two are going to be destroying each other and, like, you know, making those quips for sting and jokes for sneer and having passionless lovemaking every year until they die. And that's awful and tragic, but also it's like, that's so true to you know, so many couples. I was actually thinking that there was someone that came to mind when I was listening to this song in preparation for this. Do you know about a woman called Babe Paley?
No, not at all.
Okay, if I may, in this era, she was sort of like, in New York especially, she was the queen bee in terms of like, she was the queen bee of New York society. And for a really short time, she was Truman Capote's best friend, one of them. You know, I don't know if you know, but Truman Capote, the writer, and sort of, yeah. You know, he...
Friends with Harper Lee for a while too.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like, yeah, he was so obsessed with these types of women. And like, Babe Paley, you know, she dedicated her life, like her career was building up, you know, her husband. And, you know, she threw the best parties. She had the best art. She had the best clothes. She was a trendsetter. You know, there's a really great story that after lunch one day, she just tied her scarf to her handbag to get it out of the way. And then all of a sudden, every other woman in New York was tying their scarf to their handbag. Mm. And Truman Capote actually really famously portrayed her by, you know, satirizing her and her circle in a novel that he wrote, and I've forgotten which one it is. That's sort of what led to him being sort of ousted from New York society, like the way, because he broke the confidence of all these women. And yeah, just when I think about Phyllis, I think about women like Babe Paley, you know, just those queens, you know, those ladies who just go through life like this. And yeah, people sort of completely underestimate the pain they're in, and like, just, you know, they might be gilded cages, but they're still cages.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's so much stuff that's wrapped up into this, because 100% I am sure that this type of thing happens even nowadays, but I feel that this is such a thing that American culture was really starting to explore in the 70s, 80s, even into the 90s, which was, listen, I'm a woman, I do have power. Could I leave this relationship? Yes, but you are still providing me the lifestyle that I want to live. And I don't know if I can keep this up if I do actually leave you. So it's actually better in the long run if I just stay, which is a tragic ending. And there's been multiple like films, books, et cetera, that have been made about this subject. Yeah. But I really love how this ends, which is like, could I leave you? Absolutely, I could leave you. I could do it tonight and walk out. But will I? Even ending up with that guess, the way that each actress has interpreted how to do that line, I think it's fascinating just to break that down, because some of them, it just feels like I'm the one who's stupid, like in this thing, right? Guess. Like, of course I'm not going to do it because I'm stupid and I can't leave this. So it really turns the focus again back on her on that very final line. Supposedly, I guess you could perform it in the other way, which is like, well, guess what? Like, I'm leaving tonight sort of thing. But I don't think that's what the show is trying to go for.
No, and I think that's like the ultimate tragedy of Phyllis. You know, I think I mentioned this, you know, she's the only one who doesn't lie for a song. But her self-awareness does nothing for her, because she still doesn't have the resolve to actually follow through on it. You know, and I think it's a really good, sort of quite a humbling moment, you know, especially for those of us who are just like going, yes, Phyllis, you go, girl. And it's sort of just like going, oh, wow, no, like she isn't better than anyone else. She is actually actively choosing her own unhappiness and Ben's unhappiness as well. Like, yeah, like she's choosing to be hurt. She's choosing to limit herself. She's not taking that step towards, you know, further self-actualization. In fact, she's actively choosing not to. That's what's so lovely about the show, because, you know, it sort of puts her and Sally sort of on a closer, sort of more equal playing field as well. Because, yeah, I think a lot of people would say that Sally is, you know, a little bit pathetic and a little bit sort of that. But, like, it's really interesting, and like, you know, Phyllis could be dismissive of Sally and like the way that she behaves, but is she any better? Like, right. That's a big question.
So just a couple of last things I just want to point out about this kind of like run up to the end. There's another line change that happens in the 1987 version, which I really don't know why they did it. So when she goes like, 90% of the money you make and the rugs and the cooks, and she kind of goes through that, they change rugs to cars. I cannot see any apparent reason why they would have to change that line, because they don't change the line, darling, you keep the drugs. So it's like, it doesn't even rhyme anymore. It's weird. I don't get it.
Yeah, I haven't actually heard that version. I think cars, I don't know, they're more of an overt status symbol. You mm-hmm. know, I could see them having a collection of classic cars. And you're right, it does totally throw off the rhyme scheme as well. But I think I prefer rugs because I just kind of just see them having really fabulous, really plush, really gorgeous rugs. And I'm like, they're probably worth more in the long term.
Honestly, like what I actually love about rugs too is that there is potentially like a double meaning that could be going on with that. And I don't know if it's meant to be this way. It could literally just be rugs. But rug is also what you call a toupee. And there is other allusions that Ben wears a toupee. So I just like the fact that it's like both of those things. Like you keep the rugs like your toupees and I'll like blah, blah, blah and keep going down. So it's another like twist in the knife to him at the same time.
Oh my God, that's fabulous. I love that. That is totally a Sondheim line. If the production was particularly camp, she could almost like rip off his toupee and just throw it at him if she felt so inclined at that point.
Right.
I think it would be too obvious. But like I think one of my favorite lines in that is like, honey, I'll take the grand sugar, you keep the spinet. It's like, because isn't the spinet just the stool that you sit on?
I think a spinet is like a small piano, like a little upright piano thing. I had to look this up because I didn't really know what a spinet was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, that makes much more sense. That's got to be a dick joke, like somewhere in that. Like, I'll take the piano, you can keep a small one.
Right. Yeah. No, for sure.
You know, Phyllis has like big piano energy.
That's his t-shirt waiting to happen right there. Big piano energy. I actually really like in that whole section as she kind of goes up here. Honestly, there's going through the different names, darling, angel, honey, sugar, and like each one. Is like she's doing it almost like to talk down to him, but I love that he's using it. And honestly, too, I guess except for maybe darling, although I guess you could use it. I was just gonna say that it almost are names that men call women more often than women call men. Mm. But I think you can go both ways for a lot of these.
Well, maybe she's like listing up because they've been married for a long time. It's been something like 30 years at this point, so they've probably recycled through all the terms of endearment that you could possibly have. And, like, maybe she just, at least my interpretation, she's probably just, you know, listing off all the names that he's called her at some point and just how empty they are.
Yeah.
And,
you
know, because, they're not specific. Like, they're not specific to her. They're like, it's like, darling, sugar, honey. They're almost, like, derisive. Like, in fights as well, he would definitely be the type to call her sugar or something when they're having a fight or when, like, you know, the venison is shit or something.
this whole moment is great because as like the music like builds underneath this, right? My favorite point of this particular song, and I felt it when I also watched the 2017 National Theater version. That was my first like version of Fall as I actually saw. Was is like when he rhymes with "you take the spinet" or "you keep the spinet" and then "just wait a goddamn minute," right? Like that's a very state. That's not even sung. That's not even a sung line, really. It's like we're stating this. It's like that's a lean forward. Like oh, here we go. Like I want to see how she ends this. I just love the fact that spinet rhymes with minute in such a like kind of beautiful way and like in a very forceful and like. Oh man, she is going for it.
What a really fun, elegant rhyme that is, like spinet and minute. And just, you know, because, you know, with Sondheim, it's sort of like, you, especially when you've heard the songs before, you sort of sit there going, okay, what rhymes are you going to make next? You know, what, you know, like, genius is he going to throw out here? And like, I just appreciate that. She's not even like going, it's like just her like going, no, stop. Let's just like pause, wait a goddamn minute, admitting that she lost control.
Yeah, losing control and at the same time still rhyming with a line earlier in the song. So it's like, it's even more brilliant in my mind.
No, yeah, absolutely. It's like, oh God, don't you just wish you could live in plays and just be able to do this?
Well, Darby, thank you so much for breaking down this song with me here today. Is there a place that people can go to follow what you're doing online?
Yes. So I do have an Instagram account, which I'm trying to be more active on. It's honestly mainly just pictures of my dog at this point. It is my professional sort of like creative place, but it's mostly pictures of my dog. So if you want to see an adorable dog, go there. It's Darby2U on Instagram. The two is the number two.
Well, perfect. Thank you once again.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. You can send emails to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow Sondheim Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And you can support the show on Patreon by going to patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. Thank you to the Alberta Podcast Network, to CPA Alberta, and to Park Power this week.
Putting It Together is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere you get podcasts from. Consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Next week, we'll be talking about Loveland. Boy, does everyone need to learn to love now. As always, a big thanks to the great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and to Nick Driscoll for composing our theme music. Well, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now.
Could I leave you? Yes. Will I leave you? Will I?